Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night. Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you got the best quality meat. So, let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Sometimes cases, bizarre and tragic, are doomed to remain a mystery for decades to come. On March 31st, 1922, a murder took place that remains to this day one of the oldest unsolved cases in German history. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Around the year 1863, a farm was built in Hinterkaifeck, and living at the Bavarian homestead at the time our story takes place were Andreas Gruber, his wife Cazelia, their widowed daughter Victoria Gabriel, and her children Cazelia and Joseph. Though a previously quiet existence, the family was thrust into the spotlight in March of 1922, when an unthinkable tragedy took place that, to this day, has many shaking their heads. However, prior to this event, unusual things began happening at the farm that, when looked at later, only added to the mystery of the tale. Like the fact that, 6 months before March 31st, 1922, the family's maid suddenly quit her job because, as it was widely claimed, she began hearing strange noises in the attic and believed that the home was haunted. Then, that March, Andres came outside to find a Munich newspaper on his property that he swore he didn't purchase. Assuming the mailman might have simply dropped the paper, his confusion only grew when he found that no one in the vicinity subscribed to that particular newspaper. There were also the unknown tracks found in the fresh snow leading to a broken door lock on the farm's machine room. And later in the day, Andres himself heard the sounds of footsteps in his attic. But when he went to search the building, he found nothing and no one of concern. Telling several neighbors and friends about his observations, Andres, for one reason or another, refused to go to the police to file a report. Whether or not these reports would have made a difference is unknown. But within days of relaying his tales to acquaintances, and within days of 7-year-old Cazelia telling a school friend about an instance in which her mother, after a quarrel, ran away from the farm and was found in the forest hours later, everyone living on the Hinterkaifeck farm met a tragic and bizarre end. The last person to see the family alive, as far as anyone knows, was their new maid, Maria Baumgartner, who arrived on March 31st, 1922, to do some work. Then on April 1st, two coffee sellers arrived at the farm ready to take an order, but were stopped when their knocks went unanswered. Finding no one on the property and noticing only the gate to the machine room open, the pair left with nothing to show for their journey. Then days passed and Cazilia Gabriel failed to show up to school, and the whole family seemed to be absent from Sunday's worship. While many wondered where the Gruber family was, an assembler named Albert Hoffner went to the farm on April 4th to repair an engine and, like the coffee sellers before him, found the place abandoned. Finishing up his repairs despite their absence, at around 3:30 p.m., Lorenz Schlittenbauer, noticing the mail piling up, sent his son Johann and stepson Joseph to the farm to see if they could make contact with the family. When they came back saying that they couldn't find anyone, Lorenz went to see for himself. And arriving at the farm with two other men with him, Michael Pohl and Jacob Siegel, they entered the barn and found the bodies of 63-year-old Andres, 72-year-old Cazilia, 35-year-old Victoria, and 7-year-old Cazilia stacked one on top of the other. Searching further, they found the bodies of Maria Baumgartner, 44 years old, and young Joseph, just two, inside of the home. Alerting their families and neighbors to what was later described as one of the most gruesome and puzzling unsolved crimes in German history, the nearest police department, which was 45 miles away in Munich, were eventually informed. But by the time the lead investigator arrived, dozens of people had already walked through the scene, destroyed evidence, and completely compromised the investigation. With Inspector George Rheingruber trying his best to get the scene under control, a court physician the following day performed autopsies in the barn and determined that the most likely murder weapon was a mattock, a tool that was missing from the scene. He was also able to determine that young Cazilia, laying at the bottom of the bodies, was likely alive for several hours after the attack and had torn out tufts of her hair while lying trapped in the straw. Once the doctor was finished with his work, the heads of each of the victims were removed and sent to Munich for further examination, with reports claiming that they eventually made their way into the hands of clairvoyants in an effort to learn more about the massacre and who might have committed it. This meant that the Gruber family and Maria were all buried without their heads. And eventually, those skulls went missing during the upheaval of World War II. Back at the scene, investigators first suspected the motive for the murders was robbery and interrogated all traveling craftsmen, vagrants, and several others living in the surrounding areas. But when they found a large amount of money still inside the home, the theory was abandoned around the same time that they learned, according to the evidence, that the perpetrator or perpetrators fed the cattle, ate the entire supply of bread from the kitchen, and cut up some meat from the pantry, meaning they likely lived amongst the bodies on the farm undetected for 3 days after luring Victoria, her daughter, and her parents out into the barn, murdering them one by one with the mattock that belonged to the family, bludgeoned them in the head, and then moved into the living quarters where, using that same weapon, they killed Joseph inside of his bassinet and Maria in her bedchamber. Speaking with witnesses, investigators soon found out that an artisan, Michael Plockel, happened to pass the Hinterkaifeck farm the night of the murder and said that he saw the oven had been heated by someone who, suddenly, approached him with a lantern and blinded him. He quickly left the farm and went on his way, having never gotten a good look at the person inside of the home. Though he did claim that there was smoke coming from the fireplace that emitted a foul smell, the incident was not investigated and there were no investigations into what could have been burning in the oven. Another witness was a farmer and butcher who, on the way home, saw two unknown figures standing near the edge of the forest. When the strangers noticed him, they turned their bodies so he could not see their faces. And later, when he heard about the tragedy at the Hinterkaifeck farm, he wondered if these men might have been the suspects that they were looking for. There were also claims that a stranger in the middle of May in 1927 stopped a resident in Wadehofen and asked questions about the murder. He then shouted that he was, in fact, the killer and ran off into the woods. The stranger was never identified. With no clear motive, investigators began formulating a list of suspects in a case that, even now, remains a mystery. This list has grown, diminished, and changed over the decades, but here are just a few of the most viable suspects pulled from a list of hundreds over the course of the investigation. The first, and probably the most obvious but strange, was Victoria's husband, Carl Gabriel. While it seems the spouse is always the first suspect, if you remember correctly, Victoria was a widow. You see, Carl was reportedly killed in France by a shell attack during the First World War. However, his body was never found. And after the murders, many wondered if he, in fact, died or simply faked it. Why would he do that? Well, Joseph, who she gave birth to in Carl's absence, was rumored to be the son of Victoria and her own father. The pair's, quote, relationship was well known throughout the town, and when news spread about his actions, Andres was sent to court for raping his daughter, but in the end, both were charged with incest. After the end of the Second World War, captives who were released prematurely from Soviet captivity claimed that they were sent home by a German-speaking officer who claimed to be the murderer of the Gubber family. Some men later revised their statements, but many theorized that this officer was in fact Carl Gabriel, who, hearing about his wife and his father-in-law, sought his bloody revenge. Another suspect, one you've already heard about, was Lorenz Schlittenbauer, the man who sent his children to check on the family and was there when the bodies were discovered. According to sources, after the death of his first wife in 1918, Lorenz was believed to be in a relationship with Victoria and might have actually been the true father of Joseph. Becoming a suspect in the eyes of locals pretty early in the investigation, Lorenz allegedly acted suspicious immediately following the discovery of the bodies. Like when he, after having to break the gate to enter the barn because all the doors were locked prior to finding the bodies, suddenly seemed to produce a key to the front door and enter the house alone to find those of Joseph and Maria. A key to the home that had gone missing several days before the murder. Just another odd event happening at the farm in those days. And when asked by his companions why he had gone into the house alone, when it was unclear if the murderer was still inside, Lorenz allegedly said he went to go look for his son, Joseph. He was one of the many who moved the bodies before police arrived. And according to locals, continued to make comments and statements containing details that only the killer should be able to recall. According to a claim by the local teacher who saw Lorenz visiting the remains of the, by that point, demolished farmstead, he claimed that the man said the killer's attempts to bury the bodies in the barn was hindered by the frozen ground. Though some thought this claim was suspicious, others said he could have known this information as a person who found the bodies and a man familiar with the land and conditions on the day of the murders. Another theory involving Lorenz claims he might have killed the entire family after Victoria demanded financial support for Joseph. Before his death in 1941, Lorenz Schlittenbauer conducted and won several civil claims of slander against a person who described him as, quote, the murderer of Hinterkaifeck. Though for many he is the perpetrator, there was no clear way to tie him to the murders, nor to prove if he was indeed Joseph's father. Another potential suspect or suspects was Adolf and Anton Gump. Listed as a suspect as early as April 9th, in 1951, a prosecutor investigated the brothers in relation to the murder, and their sister, on her deathbed, claimed that they were the ones who committed that family massacre. As a result, Anton was remanded to police custody, but Adolf had, by that point, already passed away. Anton was later dismissed, and the case was eventually dropped because they couldn't find any concrete proof connecting him to the crime. Then in 1971, a woman named Therese T. wrote a letter saying that, at the age of 12, she witnessed her mother receiving a visit from a woman who claimed her sons, Carl and Andres S., were the men who killed the Gubber family and their maid. Claiming the woman stated that Andres, quote, regretted that he lost his penknife. When the farm was demolished in 1923, a knife was actually found that, though it could have belonged to literally anyone, did seem to corroborate her story. The claims, however, never went very far, and no arrests were made. Named by a fellow laborer whom he used to share a room with, Peter Weber also became a suspect after, according to that laborer, he allegedly spoke of a remote farm, accurately described the occupants, and alleged that he knew about the claims involving Andres Gruber and his daughter. He said Peter suggested killing the old man to get his family's money, and when the laborer didn't respond to his offer, he dropped the subject and moved on. Now, according to the former maid who worked for the Gruber family, she always suspected brothers Anton and Carl Bickler of committing the murders, and said that because he helped with the potato harvest on the farm, Anton knew the premises and allegedly spoke with her often about the Grubers and the Gabriels, reportedly suggesting the family, quote, ought to be dead. She also mentioned to investigators that the farm dog, who barked at everyone, never really barked at Anton, a claim that seemed to hold weight when nearby neighbors said they heard nothing strange the night of the murders. Going further, she said she believed the brothers committed the murders with the help of another former worker named George Siegel, a man who broke into the home back in 1920 and stole a number of items. He also was the one who carved the handle of what would eventually be the murder weapon back when he worked there and knew exactly where the tool was kept. The last suspects I'm going to talk about, also suggested by that former maid, were the Thaler brothers, who, having already committed several burglaries in the area, allegedly stood at the maid's window one night asking questions about the family. The problem with this theory and with many of the others was the fact that the family's money seemed to remain untouched, meaning robbery wasn't really the motive. So, despite repeated arrests, many suspects, and hundreds of witness testimonies, no murderer has ever been found, and the case officially closed in 1955. Many years later, in a theory that we've spoken about in a number of episodes, author Bill James, in his book, The Man from the Train, alleged that a man known as Paul Mueller may have been responsible for this murder, along with many, many others. Murders that all bore a striking resemblance, including the deaths of entire families, and always seemed to take place on isolated homesteads. Whether or not this is true remains unknown, and the Hinterkaifeck murders, to this day, remain one of Germany's oldest unsolved murders of a family. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to A Terrible Thing Happened on April 1st. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.